morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today's Wednesday, July 29th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Today is ground zero for Portland's own Bull Run Reservoir. The showdown with private corporate interests is underway even as we speak.
The anti-war movement seems so far away, so close at hand. Michelle Dar sheds a little perspective.
And the Senate Judiciary Committee approved Sonia Sotomayor's Supreme Court status, but the struggle isn't over. Jeff Sessions, the tulku of the Strom old fishhead Thurmond, still lurks in the background.
Portland area weather, 105 today, 75 at night. Smog and humidity will be enough to gag a warthog. There will be little or no wind at all. The power grid will stumble around in its pajamas with an ice bag on its head. And then a gradual cooling trend begins tomorrow.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. As many listeners will remember, anti-war activist Michelle Dar spent a greater part of the last winter, the coldest part, as a matter of fact, on the Capitol steps in Salem, telling the world that it's time to bring the troops home. Michelle Dar's struggle has not ceased. She is not physically on the Capitol steps. They actually had to make new laws saying that you're not allowed actually to be there after a certain time of night. Her encampment had been raided a number of times. The police came and took their cots, their drinking water, their supplies. And still, Michelle and her supporters, sometimes alone, remained on the steps with their message, stop the war. Michelle Dar is back this morning with us today to talk about the current status of the anti-war, bring the troops home movement. Good morning, Michelle. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Well, so you're not actually on the steps. When did that stop and why?
That stopped around the first part of April, and because there were a lot of other pressing issues in my life. I had been out there for nearly 6 months and needed to attend to issues within, you know, my family and community. And I feel very strongly, too, that I could be affecting change in different ways and that it was important to redouble my efforts in other areas so that to be the most effective that I could be in this capacity and in others.
What have you been doing in the recent months?
I'm addressing the fact that we're being prosecuted by Attorney General John Kroger. The district attorney refused to press charges, based on constitutional grounds, for our repeated arrests due to refusing to leave when we were told to leave from the hours of 11 to 7. The ACLU has picked up our case. We are also being represented by Mike Swaim from Salem, Oregon. And right now where the case stands is that the judge is considering whether or not to dismiss the charges altogether. So that's our current struggle right now. Myself and my family are both, myself, my soon-to-be husband are under fire for that. And we are, you know, currently fighting that. We are also doing community organizing in Salem. We're encouraging complete boycott of fossil fuels. As a very large family, we plan to completely boycott fossil fuels and are working toward implementing solutions to that so that we can, you know, have that in our own lives. And we're planning future actions, which I will be announcing closer to the time that they will take place, so that the efforts aren't sabotaged.
How do you feel about President Obama's efforts to end these conflicts?
I don't feel Obama has any intention of ending the conflicts. In fact, I think his track record and current plans, you know, speak for themselves. And what I feel has gone on here is, you know, classic case of good cop, bad cop. And, you know, I feel that he's taken some steps that are very onerous and very dangerous for this country and is not taking our country in the right direction whatsoever.
Well, Afghanistan has been described in the past as the graveyard of empires. They are the only people in the world who defeated the British Empire not once but twice. They brought down virtually the Soviet Union, and now we're there.
Right. And you know, currently increasing our numbers. I mean, he's authorized this. We got to remember, this is not Bush. This is Obama, who has authorized the largest National Guard deployment since World War II, and is planning, a troop buildup there in Afghanistan. We've already got, gosh, I'm trying to find my numbers here. We've already got 30,000 going to Afghanistan, and he's considering sending another 20. I mean, that doesn't sound like drawing down to me at all.
Michelle, just briefly, in the next few seconds that we have left, what has caused the anti-war movement currently to be relatively silent in the face of this enormous troop buildup?
Well, I feel like for ourselves and our own community that what we're doing is we're building support. We're building our community so that we are self-sufficient for starters, and also, you know, trying to engage more of the general public. And so I think that there's a lot of brainstorming and deep thought going into how we are going to engage more people, because our movement in and of itself hasn't gotten very far up to this point. We need to engage a lot more people. And so I think that there's a lot of strategizing going on as to how we're going to do that. And our community is really taking a lead in doing that. And there's a lot I could talk about, and I know I don't have much time, but I can just say that, you know, starting locally and really engaging as many people in the community is really important.
Thank you so much for that.
That's
all the time we have.
Our dependency.
Thank you so much, Michelle. That's all the time we have, but we'd like to have you back soon to continue the dialogue. Thanks for that.
I'd love to. Anytime, Chris. Always. Thank you.
$1 billion in stimulus money floating around out there. 101 Oregon police departments vying for $5 million of that money. And lucky Gresham. Gresham led the list of Oregon grants with more than $1.5 million to hire new police officers. The White House announcement yesterday about the COPS Hiring Recovery Program grants was greeted with a mixture of relief and disappointment in Oregon. The president of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police said it was a nice gesture, but just a dent in the budget. And since it's a federal program, who knows how much will go to paying informants?
Yesterday was the second parole hearing for Leonard Peltier. It's been 16 years since the government had the opportunity to do the right thing and release this man who's been behind bars for 33 years for challenging white hegemony on Indian land. Eric Seitz, Leonard Peltier's lawyer, is my guest today. Good morning, Eric. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us in these days when the heat's really on.
Thank you.
Talk about what happened at the hearing yesterday.
Well, yesterday we had a six-hour hearing, which is somewhat unprecedented. We had several witnesses who we presented who I thought were very informative and very convincing as to aspects of the case and of Leonard's entitlement to parole. And then on the other side, we had representatives of the FBI, representatives of the prosecuting office, the U.S. Attorney's Office in North Dakota, who presented the same arguments that they've always presented, that if you are responsible for the deaths of FBI agents, you should never be paroled. And the hearing officer spent over an hour talking with Leonard, asking him questions about the events that occurred back in 1975, about what's happened to him in prison and about what his aspirations and plans are if he is granted parole. Overall, we were very happy with the way the hearing proceeded. There were a couple hundred supporters outside the prison who came from all over the country, and that was a remarkable show of support on this kind of an occasion. The prison was very tense. They brought in busloads of people to guard the prison, and they had an armored vehicle there. So the whole thing was quite a throwback to events that have occurred in this country in the past, and yet overall I think we're very optimistic that the parole commission at this point in time will act favorably on Leonard's application.
When do you expect to know?
The hearing officer will render an opinion and recommendation sometime either today or tomorrow. We're not sure whether that's going to be forwarded to us at this stage or not, but it does go to the full commission, which is in Washington, D.C., actually in Maryland, and they will then render a decision within 21 days. So they have to decide the matter within 3 weeks, so we should hear something at the very latest by then.
Thank you so much for that. I know that it's difficult for you to do this and that you're traveling right now, and we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and thanks to your listeners for all the support they've provided.
My guest today has been Eric Seitz, attorney for Leonard Peltier. And we also are going to speak today with one of the RNC8 in Minneapolis, Rob Cernick. He's been involved in anarchist movements and political organizing, community organizing for a while now, and has himself had direct experience with the effects of informants on peace movements, anarchists, and the protest sphere of activities in general. Good morning, Rob. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's about time we talked again.
Yeah, good morning, Chris. Howdy from Minnesota.
So, thank you. So, how is it going with the RNCA? I understand that there are ongoing legal actions and trials are continuing for you and others. And it would seem that informants, people that you trusted that were within your organization, betrayed you in ways that are having extremely long-term effects on your lives.
Well, yeah, Chris, you know, back in, April or May, we actually had the terrorism charges, the enhancements on our sentences were dropped. Part of that was just from the massive outpouring of support around the country. We're going back to court in about 2.5 weeks, August 19th, for a scheduling conference. You know, we haven't even pled. It's been almost a year now since I've been arrested. I haven't even had a chance to really, I haven't even spoken to the judge except for that first time when I was in jail. You know, part of the thing when we're in these movements and we're in these political scenes, for us it was really important with the work we did within the Welcoming Committee to be very open and very transparent. And we're trying to build a mass organizations of people to work on these things. And so we definitely do open ourselves up to people coming in, people spying. It has been a lot more prevalent in the last few years. But, you know, in recent memory, in the early 80s, U.S. Surgical, Rudolph Giuliani's wife is actually off board of U.S. Surgical. They were sending private investigators, you know, private people, not even law enforcement, into animal rights groups to infiltrate them. It's been a huge problem in England with infiltrators, and these people don't even work for the government. So there are very little oversight, very, very little rules they have to follow. In our case, you know, there were actually a couple of sheriffs involved attending meetings, just like what happened in Olympia, not quite as ingrained in their group. I see that in Olympia he was running the listserv and stuff like that. And then there was also another person who was a professional snitch, basically made their living going around being traded off from police department to police department, being used to infiltrate people, and then moved on when it got too hot. This isn't the first time it's happened here in Minneapolis. You know, a decade ago when people were resisting the Highway 55 campaign, they sent in a couple of people to come to the camp and check things out and report back to them. And then more recently when, you know, in 2000, when there were some demonstrations against an animal geneticist conference happening, they had done the same thing where they had sent somebody in and was attending meetings. And so we have to figure out as part of this, you know, resistance movements, how do we operate in the open and be transparent and be welcoming, and at the same time, we need to also practice good security culture, and people need to, you know, try not to let these things. The biggest outcome of this is it sows distrust, and it makes us distrust each other. We cannot let that happen.
Rob, that's all. We have to leave it at that. And thank you so much. These are words that we need to hear. And we need to hear all over the country, members of the activist community, the resistance. It's important to trust, but be careful. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Rob.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much, Rob. Rob Cernick with the RNC8.
Portland has ersatz sit lie laws. New York now has the get-out-of-town-free deal. New York City is buying one-way plane tickets for homeless families to leave the city. This is Mayor Bloomberg's program to keep the homeless out of the expensive shelter system, which costs $36,000 a year per family, More than 550 families have left the city since 2007. The city even has a special travel agency for domestic travel, and the Department of Homeland, or rather the Department of Homeless Services, handles international travel.
Thanks to the continuing efforts, but let's jump to another national story. We're at the end of our time. Yesterday, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved Judge Sonia Sotomayor to be the first Hispanic justice over nearly solid Republican opposition. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina was the lone Republican who joined Democrats to support her. Hillbilly Jeff Sessions, of course, opposes Sotomayor. The near-unanimous Republican vote is a bad sign. What it means is that the GOP has, in desperation, adopted a solid obstructionist strategy. Now, what shall they prevent anything from being accomplished and then blame the Obama administration for accomplishing nothing? It works every time. And finally this.
An Ohio man, Charles Papenfuss, got a spam letter from a company saying his car warranty was due to expire. This angered Papenfuss, so he called them to complain and told the company what they were doing was a scam. Both parties insulted each other during the heated phone call, which escalated into death threats. His second-hand vehicle didn't have a factory warranty anyway. Ultimately, Papenfuss was charged with making a terrorist threat and jailed because he didn't have the bond fee of $45,000.
Never mind the premium payments.
This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, July 29th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, sitting in for Kathleen Stevenson on sabbatical. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein looks at the life and times of Leonard Peltier. Yesterday, Peltier had his hearing, as we heard, and he'll hear from his lawyer and various leaders in the Native American community.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.